Hello, this is an audiobook of the book named Time Stops at Shamily, written by Ruskin Bond. The funeral. I don't think he would go, said Aunt M. He's too small, conquered Aunt B. He gets upset and probably throw a tantrum. And you know, Pandre Lal doesn't like having children at funerals. The boy said nothing. He sat in the darkest corner of the darkened room, his face revealing nothing of what he thought and felt. His father's coffin lay in the next room, the lid fastened forever over the tired, wistful countenance of the man who had meant so much to the boy. Nobody else had mattered, neither uncles nor aunts nor fond grandparents. Least of all, the mother who was hundreds of miles away with another husband. He hadn't seen her since he was 4. That was just over 5 years ago. And he did not remember her very well. The house was full of people, friends, relatives, neighbors. Some had tried to fuss over him but had been discouraged by his silence, the absence of tears. The more understanding of them had kept their distance. Scattered words of condolences passed back and forth like dragonflies on the wind. Such a tragedy. Only 40. Not one realized how serious it was, devoted to the child. It seemed to the boy that everyone who mattered in the hill station was present. And for the first time, they had to run off the house, for his father had not been a sociable man. Books, music, flowers, and his stamp collection had been his main preoccupations apart from the boy. A small hearse, drawn by a hill pony, was led in at the gate, and several able-bodied men lifted the coffin and maneuvered it into the carriage. The crowd drifted away. The cemetery was about a mile down the road, and those who did not have cars would have to walk the distance. The boy started through a window and small procession passing through the gate. He'd been forgotten for the moment, left in care of the servants who were the only ones to stay behind. Outside, it was misty. The mist had crept up the valley and settled like a damp towel on the face of the mountain. Everyone was wet, although it hadn't rained. The boy waited until everyone had gone, and then he left the room and went out on the veranda. The gardener, who had been sitting in the bed of nasturtiums, looked up and asked him, the boy, if he needed anything. But the boy shook his head and retreated indoors. The gardener, looking aggrieved because of the damage done to the flower beds of the monairs, shambled off the quarters. The sahib's death meant that he would not be out of a job very soon. The house would pass into others' hands. The boy would go to an orphanage. There weren't many people who kept the gardeners these days. In the kitchen, the cook was busy preparing the only big meal ever served in the house. All those relatives and the parrot too would come back famished, ready for somber but nevertheless sustainable meal. He too would be out of the job soon, but cook were always in demand. The boy spilled out the house by a back door and made his way into the lane through a gap of the thicket of dog roses. When he reached the main road, he could see the mourners wending their way round the hill to the cemetery. He followed at a distance. It was the same road he had often taken with his father during their evening walks. The boy knew the name of the almost every plant and wildflower that grew on the hillside. These and various birds and insects had been described and pointed out to him by his father. Looking northwards, he could see the higher ranges of the Himalayas and the eternal snows. The graves in the cemetery were so laid out that if their incumbents did happen to rise one day, the first thing they would see could be the glint of the sun on the snow-covered peaks. Possibly the site had been chosen for the view. But to the boy, it didn't seem as if anyone would be able to thrust aside those massive tombstones and raise them from their graves to enjoy the view. Their rest seemed as eternal as snows. It would take an earthquake to burst these stones as turned and thrust the coffins up from the earth. The boy wondered why people hadn't made it easier for the dead to rise. They were so securely entombed that it appeared as though no one really wanted them to get out. God has need your father. In those other words, a well-meaning missionary had tried to console him. And God had, in many ways, laid claim to thousands of men, women, and children who had been putting to rest here those needs and seed rows. What could he have wanted them for? Of what use are we to God when we are dead? Wondered the boy. The cemetery gate stood open, but the boy leaned against the old stone wall and stared down the mourners at the shuffled about with the unease of the batsman about to face a very fast bowler. Only this bowler was invisible and would come stealthy and from behind. Pardeh Lal's voice droned on through the funeral service, and then the coffin was lowered down, deep down. The boy was surprised at how far down it seemed to go. Was that another, better world down in the depth of the earth? Could anyone, even as Samson, push his way back to the surface again? Superman did in a comic, but his father was a gentle soul who wouldn't fight too hard against the earth and the grass and the roots of the tiny trees. Or perhaps he'd grow into a tree and escape that way. If ever I'm put away like this, thought the boy, I'll get into the root of the plant and then I'll become a flower. And then maybe a bird will come to carry my seed away. I'll get out somehow. A few more words from the padre and then some of these presents threw handfuls of earth over the coffin before moving away. Slowly, in twos and threes, the mourners departed. The mist of shallowed them. They did not see the boy behind the wall. They were getting hungry. He stood there until they all had gone. Then he noticed that the gardeners or caretakers were filling in the grave. He did not know whether to go forward or not. He was a little afraid, and it was too late now. The grave was almost covered. He turned and walked away from the cemetery. The road stretched ahead of him, empty, swathed in mist. He was alone. What had his father said to him once? The strongest man in the world is who stands alone. Well, he was alone, but at the moment he did not feel very strong. For a moment he thought his father was beside him, that they were together on their long walks. Instinctively, he put out his hand, expecting his father's warmth, comforting touch. But there was nothing there. Nothing. No one. He clenched his fists and pushed them back deep down into his pockets. He lowered his head so that no one would see his tears. There were people in the mist, but he did not want to go near them, for they had put their father away. He'll find out a way, the boy said fiercely to himself. He'll get out somehow.